Welcome to the Organize 365 Podcast Special Teacher Podcast Edition. In this podcast series, you'll meet Jamie, the principal of Lawrenceburg Middle School, and learn how she got herself organized and all about implementing the Organize 365 Teacher Workbox in her whole building in the first Organize 365 pilot program. Jamie and I explore school organization from superintendents all the way down to teachers and personal organization. We talked through what didn't work, what we would have done differently, and how other buildings and districts can embrace the teacher workbox. So now listen in to my next conversation with Jamie. Jamie, welcome back to the Organize 365 podcast.
Hello.
Okay, so we are in our third podcast in this series where we are really setting the stage for the teacher pilot that we did in the fall of 2023. And in this third episode, now I'm going to be learning. I'm going to be listening and learning. This is where Jamie is going to talk to us a little bit about, you know, what she learned during her certifications, the role of the assistant principal, the role of the principal, and then in her superintendent's license, the role of the superintendent. Now, remember, every state is different. And I really think when you get down to it, even inside of states, when you get to the principal and assistant principal level, you're going to be different at each district. So we're going to paint a couple of broad strokes, because if you're a former teacher like me or you're a current teacher, we don't really know what we don't know, because we don't have these licenses and we don't have this training. So what is the role of the assistant principal, the principal, and the superintendent? And then that's going to come into play later when we're talking about the pilot. But go ahead and tell us about your experience of being an assistant principal. Why don't you start with that? Like, what was your assistant principalship like?
So my assistant principalship, so again, disclaimer, this is Indiana, and yeah, it's the ones that I have had an experience working at. My assistant principalship is at a different school corporation than where I currently am. Also, in Indiana, we call them corporations. When I was in Arkansas, they were called districts. So just know it's all the same basic thing. But as an assistant principal, I think the biggest difference was I did whatever the principal told me to do, first of all, right? Like, anytime you work in education, there's that little piece that says, and other job is duties assigned. So I dealt with special ed meetings a lot. We had a program called RTI, which was response to intervention before you entered special ed. That program was completely under me. Attendance was under me because there was usually discipline assigned to that. The way I looked at it was, my relationship with the staff and the parents, I was a liaison between them, but I was dealing a lot with behaviors, attendance, that type of thing. It was very much student-based. An hour and a half of my day every day was in the cafeteria at lunch duty. Those types of things, walking the building, security, I kind of worked with the principal and I together. And then again, like, I did do some of the observations and that kind of stuff. But to be honest, all the observations, I would say back then, the role of the assistant, like, we do have to split them up because the principal would not have enough time to do all of them. But I always made sure with her, again, we worked very well together. We had some struggling staff. So she always took the ones that were struggling or any brand new staff. I've still kind of kept that philosophy where I am now, because I feel like the principal should be the one that is in charge of that. And so the assistant principal kind of just is there to support.
Well, and it seems to me, one of the things that I think I'm uniquely created to do is it's almost like I'm in one experience, but I'm comparing it to all these other experiences. So as you're talking, I'm thinking about business. I'm thinking about entrepreneurship. I'm thinking about households. I'm thinking about all that. It's like the assistant principal does everything within the building. Like, I didn't hear you say anything about like going to outside meetings, wherever it was like everything, like talking to the principal and making sure everything within the building is working. So it's an inner building job.
100%. I almost went to no PD. PD for professional development. So if I say PD from now on, It's professional development. As an assistant, very rarely did I go to that unless it was something on school safety. I was very much in the building. Okay. And my role with parents, unfortunately, sometimes was kind of they probably saw me more as a negative because I was calling when there were problems with behavior or problems with attendance. Very rarely did they hear from me if there was something good going on.
Yeah. So when I was in education before I had my children, adopted my children, I was home for 10 years, then went back into the classroom for about 18 months, and then I was home again. My children both ended up on IEPs, so individualized education plans, meaning that their needs in the classroom were significant enough to warrant a legally written alternative education plan. It's the best way to explain it. And having been a teacher and also being a parent of children who qualify for IEPs, I understand both parts. So the funny assistant principal story I have is I walked into our school district and I was good at advocating for my kids' needs, but also I was good at providing for my kids' needs outside of the public school as well. So I would pay for tutors, and ultimately we ended up putting them in private schools, and we paid for that. We did not have the state pay for that, which we could have fought them, but we didn't. So before the second child ended up in the private school, I had quite a few meetings, you know, with the assistant principal. And also, I got to the point where I was advocating for other parents' children's needs, and I would show up at other people's meetings, which they didn't really like. And they would not look at me in those meetings, and they would not address me, and they would pretend I was not talking. And I would say to the parent, I would say, may I speak on your behalf? And they'd be like, yes. And they would continue to stare at the parent while I spoke. And all of the things that they told the parent that they would not qualify for, they qualified for by the time I left the meeting, because I understood the law and I understood the tests that you would need in order to show or support that intervention was warranted for that child. So at one point, I walked into the building. I think I was going to lunch with my daughter or something like that. I wasn't even there for a meeting. I walked in and the assistant principal was headed my way towards the office, spun on his heel and started walking down a hallway that I knew was a dead end. And I was like, where does he think he's going? Like, there are only three classrooms down there. Like, he didn't all of a sudden realize he has to go to those three classrooms. So yeah, there does tend to be this tension between the parents and the assistant principal. And I think the reason is because twofold. One, there are only so many resources. Mm-hmm. And the draw on those resources is getting significantly higher. And this is just my personal observation. The amount of children that legitimately qualify for individualized education plans, which are a legal document, is significant. It is 25 to 30% per building. And I'm telling you, this is across the United States. It was not set up for this quantity of children. That's number one. And number two, parents are supposed to advocate for their children, and teachers are advocating for children as well. It's just really hard. It's just really hard. The special ed portion of education right now, it's not, I just want to say, it's not that these children were here 50 years ago and we just didn't notice them. That I don't even know who's still trying to pretend to say that. That is not true. Children who qualify for individualized education plans, it is not an easy process to qualify. You don't just automatically get put on that list. There is a legitimate need and a concern that needs to be addressed. And the schools and the school districts are doing everything they can to meet each child's individual needs while running schools. It is like we're all between a rock and a hard place right now. It is a very, very hard place to be. And so that assistant principal job, if you're lucky enough to have an assistant principal inside of a building, Right. Because not all buildings do, it is a full-time job. And it is extremely, I would think, emotionally stressful.
It was. Mm-hmm. And now I will say the one difference, I had been the counselor in that corporation and then moved up. So people knew me from two different roles, I guess. So I think it could have been even more stressful had it not been that I had that counseling side, because I do think there are times that I was able to see that side of it and be able to bring that perspective. I think that has made me a better administrator across the board, is because I did have those those 4 years as a counselor.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I am thinking to all the different, my kids have been in every kind of school there is, like Montessori, Catholic, private, public, we've been in all of them. Not all of them have counselors.
Oh yeah, no, they don't.
And my kids, by the way, love the counselors. They're all about the talking. They would love more talking time. I think counseling is a huge benefit. I don't even know what the laws and rules are on that, but I don't think a lot of the schools we've been in have had counselors.
Yeah, that's actually one reason that I had switched from the school that I taught at for so long. I moved to the other school corporation because the first one did not have middle school counselors. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them have them at the high school level because then they're dealing with credits and getting them ready for college and that kind of thing.
Right. But
it has become more common in the last few years, but the numbers are, you know, the best practice is around 250 to 300 per person, which is already not easy to do. And I would say most school corporations are probably looking at more like 500 per counselor.
The older I get, the more I realize as a child, I was taught, or I guess I just learned that you went to the doctor and the doctor had answers, and you went to school and school had answers, like you went to all these other people and they all had answers. And now the older I get, the more I realize, oh no, we're just all figuring it out all together. and ultimately you are responsible for you and you are responsible for your family.
Right.
And everyone else there is there to support and help you, not there to do it all for you. That's a huge realization I've had recently. Okay, let's segue over to principal. So if you have an assistant principal and they're focused in the building, then can you tell me a little bit about a principal and what their roles and responsibilities are?
I think that was my biggest aha moment when I went from the one to the other was, well, first of all, not only is it different every state, every build, every corporation, even within buildings, but every corporation is very different. There was a lot of learning my first year that, you know, my soup would come in and be like, well, why did you do it that way? I was like, I don't know. That's the way we did it at my other one. And nobody told me any different. Right. And so there was that learning, but the budget as an assistant, I never dealt with the budget. I just thought there was like some money tree and sometimes it dried up and sometimes it was abundant, right? January, we could get whatever we want. December, don't ask for a pen. So the budget, I never had to worry about the budget as an assistant. I didn't even know there was, like I said, a budget that the principal was in charge of. Observations of staff, like that becomes a big deal because you're dealing not only as the assistant, all I ever dealt with was teachers. As the principal, I'm dealing with the instructional assistants. I'm dealing with custodial staff. I'm dealing with cafeteria staff. Like, so all of that falls under the principal. And anytime there, you know, staff conflicts or parent conflicts with staff, like those kinds of things came to me as a principal, just running of the school. Activities and those types of things. Like I usually have to sign off on them. I have to kind of be the initiator and the planner. So I have to be like, okay, well, if we do this, then we've got to change the schedule for that day. So you have to be like very much a planner. And I would say the communication changed with the community. I definitely am out in the community a lot more. My view with parents, sometimes I'm still, again, because my assistant is out a lot at the special ed meetings or, you know, those types of things, I do have some discipline that I deal with. But for the most part, if he's in the building or she's in the building, then they deal with that. Now, my assistant also deals with athletics. So they have even more on their plate. I would say that's something that I very rarely do unless it's going to a game as a supervisor. Nobody wants me dealing with the athletics. We had a whole thing with the gym this year that our gym floor had to be replaced. And I went in at one point and I was like, what are all those holes and how are we filling them in? And my superintendent went, you think that's the floor? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, that's the subfloor. Like, why in the world would you think that was the real floor? What gym have you ever been in? And I was like, Yeah, I'm just going to go back to my office right now.
Exactly.
So, you know, it was just, but I think that, you know, there's a ton of PD that I go out for because state mandates come down and they do communicate it to your superintendent, in which mine is phenomenal at relaying information. I have friends of mine across the nation, not just in Indiana, that, you know, we're supposed to stay on top of it. So sometimes you've got somebody above you that's really good. And sometimes you've got somebody above you that they're like, oh, there's a new legislation. And you do have to advocate for students. And sometimes that does get, you know, teachers, I think when I was a teacher, you think, oh, like you said, they're the person behind the curtain. I try and stress to the teachers, like having conversations with them. But again, I don't know that every administrator does that, but that was kind of my role. And I think, again, I've brought my experience from teaching, my experience from counseling, my experience from the, and my experience as a parent. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm like, I always tell the teachers, if they're going to come to me, it's going to be students first, teacher second. Like, as far as if there's something that we need to do, our job is to do it for the students, but I'm here to support the teachers as well. So if we have to do this, what supplies do you need? What can I do to help you with that? But yeah, the student needs to be in your classroom, right? Like, they can't learn English in the office with me. We've already established that. Like, that's not good. But working with them and being a team, I think is the biggest thing with the principalship.
Okay, so the only thing that you do that I knew you did was observe teachers. I did not even know any of those other things principals did.
Yeah. And I like to get out, right? Like, I even had the meeting with the staff this week, and I'm like, guys, you guys just got to hold me accountable, because this year we do have several students with behavior issues. And for whatever reason, I joked and said, I'm like, they'll always be like, well, take them to Jamie. She's like the whisperer. Like, she can get them calmed down. And I'm like, but I need that goodness out there too. So that's actually a goal of mine between now and the end of the year, is like getting out there and seeing all the good that is going on in the schools, because there's a lot of really good stuff going on. And I can't help the teachers if I'm not out there and seeing it happening.
So I thought it was interesting that you said running the school, running the activities, the extracurriculars, all those things. I mean, I don't know who I thought did that. But when I was in the pilot program with you and in the building a couple of times, I was there on the day of movie day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and your husband, Joe, also is a videographer. So he was videoing the thing. So he was there. So he and I were talking. You were at some mandated meeting. And I was like, what's this? He's like, oh, this is how Jamie organizes people for movies. And there were all these color-coded tickets on tables. There was a table for each movie you're going to, and then there was your soda request, and it was color-coded. But these tickets, also, the soda request was in the same font as the movie that you want. Like, the attention to detail, the hobby work that you were doing there was funny. But that is a great example of how, if you could take us through that, like, this is the last day before winter break. All the kids go to the movie. If you can imagine a middle school descending on a movie theater near you. So they all go to the movies. They go to certain movies. But then how you organize them. Actually, what was that like the first year you did it? And how did you come up with how you organize them? And then tell us how you organize them. Yeah, because this is a great example of, yes, it gets done, or yes, it gets done organized.
Yeah. So when we used to do it, I don't even know what happened. It was so bad that first year that, like, we got them in there and I was like, what just happened? Like, it was so, so difficult. But there was no organization. I will tell you when it started, because basically we just had the three theaters and they just got in them and they were posted, and then they just kind of like descended upon the theater, like you said. Luckily, the theater is closed except for our group. The year that we came up with a plan was the theater near us. They are phenomenal. And they always let us watch. It's always the Friday before, like, Christmas or whatever. So a big movie usually comes out. And they never told us we couldn't watch that movie. Well, one year it was going to be Star Wars. like the big Star Wars that came out. I know nothing about Star Wars. I've never seen any of them, but it was a big deal. And so she told me, she's like, Jamie, it's a 2.5 hour movie. We got to get them in. We got to get them out. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, I need to know drinks in advance because of da da da. And I'm like, okay. So I sent out a Google form. Every kid in the building fills it out. I feel like maybe at the beginning, maybe they only had two choices and now they get three. I feel like there was like a PG-13 and then there was a PG movie when I first got there, if I remember correctly. Now they get three choices. So there's usually two PG-13 movies and then a PG movie. And the staff all get to go. The students all get to go, but they do have to choose their movie based on they choose their movie and their drink. Now, not only do we take 500 children to the movies like this.
500.
We don't use the big yellow buses. We use our activity buses that only can fit 14 children at a time.
Unbelievable.
And so towards the end, we do get a yellow bus. But we at Lawrenceburg, we double bus. So our buses are like an hour. They do the elementary route is after us. So they came about an hour into this process. So the kids fill out the survey. They truly base it on their friends, base their drink choice on where they want to sit, because that's how we load the buses. And then we bring them all down into the gym, and it's me with like 500 kids, and I have them sorted by movie and drink and all this other stuff. My favorite story of that, there was a student that came out to me one year. A staff member had stayed behind to help. And so she was like sending them out to me. So the drink choices are their Coke products at this theater. So it's Coke, Diet Coke, Cherry Coke, Sprite, Coke Zero, and water. And so I always start with Cherry Coke because it's like a million of that. It's like 3/4 of the children for that movie go to Cherry Coke. So then the next big choice is Coke. So here comes this group of kids. And the kid walks up and he goes, we're Diet Coke. You don't want Diet Coke yet. I've already had them step off to the side. I sent a kid back in for Sprite, but I wasn't getting yelled at. And I was like, love it. Because the kids knew how it worked, right? Like they knew Sprite was the next big one. So I was getting them out based on size of that. So then 2020 happened and we had to go to every third seat because you had to be 6 feet apart. And the theater had taken the time of 2020 to upgrade. So instead of being able to fit 300 kids in a theater, the most I can fit is like 170 now. So now I really take over like half of their theaters in the morning. So now the drinks are even more important because you might not even be in the same theater as your friend, because like all the Cherry Cokes usually take up one theater for their movie. So yeah. And then we hand them out that morning. And then that's how we literally take over the theater. We put signs up everywhere. And yeah, we do this twice a year. And we're
so
signed.
I love this because you see in that story of the Diet Coke that the kids know there's a system. The kids will follow a system.
Yes.
And systems create clarity. They create consistency. They create a secure feeling like I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing because there is a system. Lack of systems, lack of classroom control, chaos. Yes. Like systems, order, organization creates a feeling of knowing that, okay, I'm supported here. Somebody is in charge. I just need to do my part. And when you're lacking systems and processes, even if you're getting the end job done, everybody's more nervous, anxious, and has this unsettled feeling inside. And when you have a nervous, anxious, unsettled feeling inside as a staff, the kids pick up on that. Like, I mean, they're all over. And it just can go downhill so fast. And I know that this is a very simple story and it's very much overkill, including the fonts that you put on these things. But I love how you said the kids change. The students change their drink order so they could sit with their friends in the movie. So that's a great example. Like you have choice and you have our organization and it's not always exactly the same. So great. If you want to sit with me, you're going to get Sprite because we're all getting Sprites and now you're getting Sprite. But you get to see the movie that you want to see. And that organization that you have, like I still don't even know how that happens at all, but it happens with military precision now. And it also makes the last day before winter break super fun because nobody's wondering where we need to go or what we need to go, or, oh shoot, I forgot that, go grab that, or who's going to get this kid here, we need another yellow bus. Like, there's none of that. Like, everybody just gets to enjoy the day because it's so planned.
Well, and I think too, another thing that I do at our school, we do a trip every year to DC and New York City, which the offer for you when you're done with your program is to still go with us so that you can see Mount Vernon and all of that. So that offer is still there. What? But I think that because I am as organized as I am, the staff and the parents trust the fact that I'm taking their children to New York City, right? We're the only school corporation in the area that does both DC and New York. Most of them just do DC. One other one kind of changes it up every year and to see, just to see where they can fit it in. But we do 5 fundraisers. We do, like, it is, again, but it's funny because, like, the kids this week, 8th graders, they've never done the trip before, right? But they came up last week and they're like, we have not selected our food for that trip yet. The trip is in May, Lisa.
And I'm like, we're recording this in February.
But I was like, but I usually do. But I told them, I said, here's the deal. We're trying to figure out if we're going to be on 3 buses or 4. So until payments are in and I know we're going to be on 4 buses, I'm not doing the food choices. Like, it's that planned out that people who have never been on the trip before know that I'm a little bit behind right now because I haven't sent out that survey about food choices for a boat trip in New York City on the last day. Like, they're like that much planned out. But I think it also gives some relief to the parents that it is that planned out and it is that organized. And we've given, like, I know how much the trip is. And so we've organized a variety of things. So that brought that piece on.
Well, and the planning creates the expectation. Mm-hmm. And you then meet the expectation of the planning. So if you want, and I'm telling you, kids love structure. Humans like structure. We like to have choice, but we also like structure. So you're giving them the choice. They want the choice inside of structure. Choice with no structure is complete chaos. Okay. And structure with no choice is no fun. And so in order to have both, you almost have to be more planned. Okay, I want to get into how you got organized as a principal, but real quick, can you give us an overview of a superintendent? Can't wait to find out what they do.
So I would say the superintendent role is going to be vastly different depending on the size of your corporation. And I know very little about this only because I did do it. I did the training for it. I worked very closely with my superintendent during that. I would say it's just such an overarching role. Mm-hmm. You have to, again, the budget is astronomical. Like, you're not just looking at a budget, my little so much budget, like times 4, right? And then they also he's out a ton on community things or up at the State Department and that kind of thing. So they are very much the face of the corporation. You're expected to be at things. And the thing is it's kind of like we talked about within the house, like nobody notices if you are doing it. It's when you don't do it that people notice. And I think that's the same thing. Like if he didn't go to events, people are going to notice. But when he's there, people don't always necessarily notice. His kids went through our corporation as well. But I think the biggest thing is the building. Now, again, it depends on the size of your corporation. Sometimes they have somebody that helps with the curriculum or somebody that helps with buildings and grounds. But ultimately, the superintendent, like, we went through a massive building project these last 4 years. Our buildings and grounds guy didn't come to present. The superintendent was the one presenting. The superintendent was the one going out and getting all of the bids and that kind of stuff. Now, he was getting input from everybody, but he was the one coming and doing the presentations at the board and bringing in the people to do that. That is when I realized I can't be a superintendent.
So, and then there's the board. Like, I totally forgot about the board. The board is like really powerful. And it's like, we really don't even know what they do. I don't know what they do.
Yes. So, and I think that happens a lot because we've had people before that are like teachers and they're like, I'm going to get on the board and I'm going to change all these things. And again, it does depend on each state, but the boards, you have rules and regulations within that. And the superintendent, the board can determine like, we don't like how you're running it and you're done. And so they, you know, they're at the whim of, and sometimes they're appointed, most are elected, at least in Indiana. And you usually end up having an odd. So there's either a 5-person board or a 7-person board. In Indiana, we have a 7. So, and then they're all elected based on like where they live within the area. So you can't be like a board member and live in the county over or anything like that.
Yeah, ours are elected in Ohio as well. So when so funny, like the superintendent, I'm like, oh yeah, there are superintendents. Like I don't really think about it until it's like, there's a new one. They left and it's in the news. I'm like, oh yeah, we even have an assistant superintendent where I live. It seems to me like once you get beyond the principal level and you're at the superintendent and the board level, like you mentioned, the board is voted on by the population, you're now into government. Like you're into politics at that point. Mm-hmm. And it's almost to me, because I know nothing, that the superintendent is kind of like a CEO in that if you're in a publicly traded company or if you were a CEO in a large company, the CEO is responsible for the entire organization, but also they're accountable for the entire corporation. And they go out and they secure funding and they lobby for whatever political they need. It's a very visible role. Yeah, yes. Just a lot of, we'd love to have a superintendent come on and tell us what you do.
Well, and the assistant superintendents are usually kind of like the assistant principals. Yeah. They're not leaving a whole lot. District. And or they may communicate with others in their area, but not at the state level. Like he goes to a lot of state level meetings and that type of thing. Definitely, he's got to play the politics game and that kind of thing. But they have a lot of roles that people don't really realize. I mean, they're the ones that have to get out and drive the roads to determine whether or not there's a snow day. So, yeah.
That's what the assistant superintendent does?
No, that's our superintendent does that.
Okay.
Sometimes they do delegate it to their assistants, or if they're a really large corporation, a variety of people will do it. But our superintendent does it.
So. Yeah. And just even that snow day, like we're obviously in the north having this conversation, but living here in Cincinnati, you're in Southern Indiana. I grew up in the Akron, Cleveland area. Like snow day, it could start if it didn't start heavy snowing at 5 a.m., you were going to school because the salt trucks were so good up there. Like you're having school, but down here in Southern Indiana and in Cincinnati, it doesn't really snow. First of all, we don't have as many plows and salt, but also we get a lot more ice. And then when you consider if you're having a snow day or not, because I used to be like, this is ridiculous from Cleveland. Why are you having a snow day? You've got to think about if you don't call a snow day, your brand new high school drivers are driving in that snow ice mix. And we don't have public busing in our district for high school kids. So none of the high school kids are on a school bus that, you know, has a lot more weight to it. They're all either brand new drivers or their parents are driving them. And then, you know, anyway, Cincinnati, heavy rain and you're not getting anywhere. It's raining. You just add 30 minutes. Like, I don't know what to tell you. So how you determine a snow day, really, you have a lot of factors to weigh. It's not just how much snow. It's who's driving. When are they driving? If it's too cold, how long are they standing at the bus stop before they get picked up for the bus? Cause we had a couple of years ago where they called school cause it was too cold. Cause it just wouldn't be safe for those kids to be standing at a school bus. There's a lot of different variables that those superintendents have to weigh in order to make that decision, which doesn't make sense when you wake up at 8 o'clock and go, the roads are fine. Like that's not necessarily how they made their decision.
Well, and your roads might be fine, but the county roads aren't or whatever. And it was a bigger deal. I mean, because you have to make them up now. Like when we were all young, you didn't necessarily have to make up the snow days, but now you have to make them up. So now we do e-learning days, but then like, I know he has to weigh every single time somebody wants something, you know, like when you're looking at a cost analysis for a corporation, You've got to be able to be like, okay, how are we going to fund that long term? Because there's a lot of times that people will fund something, or even the state will fund something, and they'll only fund it for like 2 or 3 years. And then when people get mad because the initiative's gone away, but it's like, well, the state quit funding it and we didn't have the funds to take up the funding. So, but there's a lot of that kind of stuff that people don't always realize either.
And I'm glad we did this podcast. I learned a lot. And I think that until you've actually been in the shoes of all of these people, and luckily for us, you've been in most of the shoes, like you've gotten all the way up until you just haven't been a superintendent yet. I think it is so helpful when you are in a, like for teachers, like for me as a former teacher, I didn't really even think about what the assistant principal, principal, superintendent are doing. And they're also working as many hours as we as teachers are, or more, because they're working year round. Yes. And they have as many responsibilities or more than we do, because we report to them, but they report to the state. They report to the school board. Like they report to outside entities that aren't even in the district. At least when you're a teacher in the building, all your other teachers and your principal, like you're all in the soup together. You all know what you're in. Like all those soups have to come together underneath that soup, that superintendent. Yes. And then that superintendent has to advocate for your mixed bean soup at the state level and at the board level and all those other things. So it's not like money isn't being given to teachers, or expectations are put on teachers that aren't put on everybody inside of all of academia, like all the way up. Like this is a, I guess, systemic problem. This is a academic issue that there is visible work that we're doing and then a lot of invisible work that we're doing. And so I think this is a good place to stop. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about how you and I got way too excited, way too fast, and basically we're able to launch a pilot over July 4th weekend. Yeah. So we'll share that story next. Thanks, Jamie.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Organization is a learned skill that is taught. Teachers teach. Districts need to teach and support teachers in the additional administrative roles in education. The Teacher Workbox is a comprehensive system that does just that. First, the Teacher Workbox has a complete online course that makes visible all the invisible roles in education. And it also includes the school supplies of a physical box, 40 slash pockets, and a workbook. Additionally, the annual teacher camp in July is included in this course, in which teachers will build their box for the first time or rebuild their box each summer for the next school year. They'll set up their systems, and they'll be part of a positive online teacher community of other teachers doing the same. Then throughout the school year, from Labor Day to Memorial Day, with a 4-week break in December, there will be weekly accountability groups in our teacher club from 8 to 9:30 Eastern on Thursday nights. Don't worry, if people can't attend live, there's always a replay. And this is a lifetime membership. Just like everything we learn in college when we're getting our teaching degree, the learning that comes with the Teacher Workbox will stick with teachers for the duration of their teaching career. And they will have access to the summer camp and the weekly accountability for the duration of their teaching career. That's right. One enrollment, lifetime access. Organize 365 supports teachers so they can teach and support students. We would love to partner with you in the Teacher Workbox and getting that going in your school, in your grade level, or in your district. Go ahead and email customerservice@organize365.com if you have any more questions or if you want directions on how to place a purchase order.